Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 8th of December 2013. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Johnny Fox, Julie Raby, Paul in London, Nick from Partially Obstructed View, and Gareth James. Welcome to the 150th episode. A quick note, one of our contributors, Julie, was stuck in a coffee shop, so I'm afraid there's a fair bit of background noise when she's speaking. We're now going to talk about American Psycho, which is a new musical thriller on at the Almeida Theatre. The book is by Roberto Aguirre Sacchessa, music and lyrics by Duncan Sheik, and based on the novel by Bret Easton Ellis. And it's a co-production with Headlong. I'm not sure if this is Rupert Gould's first thing as artistic director or just a prelude to his taking over as artistic director of the Almeida. I suppose the headline cast member here is Matt Smith, recently having given up the mantle of the Doctor. But there's a lot of other good people in it. John, tell me more about this production, what you thought of it.
Well, I was very excited to go when we did, because, first of all, we'd secured, or Paul had secured, tickets before the casting was announced. And I think this early in the run, this late in the previews, the audience is mostly not Whovian fans of Matt Smith, which perhaps gives you a better opportunity to appreciate whether he can act, whether he can sing, without a really devoted entourage in the front few rows. It was also wonderful because I sat behind Rupert Gould and Ez Devlin, the designer, and Paul sat in front of Duncan Sheik and Roberto. I'm glad you pronounced it, Tim, because I'm not sure I can do it, but Roberto Double-Barreled, who also wrote the music. And it was fascinating to hear and see their reactions to the show. It's obviously still being refined. And my first observation of it is that I think it elevates the movie particularly well, and also to a certain extent the book. I think the book is far, far better than the movie. I think it was shocking and outrageous when it came out. It had that sort of frisson, like something like The Naked Lunch did when it appeared. And it didn't become an immediate bestseller, but you know, later it was released in paperback and sold a million copies and became a bit of a cult classic. And I think in a way you should read this as the staging of a cult classic. And I think they have done it. I think the staging is very, very fine indeed. There's a lot of kinetic projection. There's a lot of energy in the movement through scenes. It reminds you perhaps a little bit of Ghost in that respect. And didn't Ez Devlin do the Olympic ceremony or something like that anyway? So it's got that sort of energy about it. As has the music. The music is not entirely original. In fact, not much original as far as I can recall. There's an awful lot of either sort of backing track music from people who were popular at the time the novel is set, like, you know, Huey Lewis and the News is mentioned quite a bit. And also there's the original songs seem to adhere to that sort of synth pop 80s techno beat material, which is also pretty good. The only problem for me is that in the first act, there's too much of it. The first act is an hour and 25 minutes, and really, 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 Rupert, if you listen to this, if you take advice at all, it needs cutting. It needs cutting by half an hour. The show is 2 hours 50, 2 hours 55 altogether, including the interval. And in a small venue like that, for a narrative that isn't very complicated to get over, you do not need that much stage time. So I would say lose one murder. Definitely add more gore. It is quite gory. The blood of the killings of the central Patrick Bateman character is pretty smartly done, but it could be even more gory. And there's a beautiful incident in the book that's also a very effective scene in the production, where he meets a tramp in an alley on his way home from a party or something like that in Manhattan. And I don't think it's giving anything away to say that in the book, first of all, he kicks the tramp's dog to death, and then he kills the tramp. And they've done it without the dog. And I know this will be a difficult thing to stage, but I do think that that little bit of inhumanity further helps you to understand the psychosis of the character. And all he does in this is kills fairly smart people and prostitutes. And I thought there was something missing from the creation of the psychotic character because they left that incident out. But, you know, he's Sweeney wearing Todd's. He's the demon butcher of Wall Street. This is a very, very good realization of Patrick Bateman. If you want to talk about Matt Smith as an actor, he is obviously a very good actor, although I'm not hugely familiar with his work because I'm sorry to confess this to you, Tim, but I haven't watched Doctor Who since Patrick Troughton was the Doctor. because I'm fairly convinced it's still a children's television programme, but we'll debate that separately. So I haven't seen him on stage before, but he's possibly credible as this character. He's physically very, very tightly honed. I mean, his body looks amazing. And I think he has that kind of slightly twisted face that isn't classically handsome, but possibly suits this character because you are meant to see Patrick Bateman as a little bit strange. If you'd wanted him to blend in, you might have chosen one of the other good-looking young men who also is in the cast to play Patrick. The ensemble have to play a lot of parts. There is some dodgy ensemble work, but there's also some very good smaller characterizations as well. Patrick Bateman's secretary is very well played, as is his mother and his best friend, played by Jonathan Bailey. Jonathan Bailey from Broadchurch, as he's always announced. Well, Johnny Bailey, I felt very sorry for him because his character disappears midway through the first act, and he has to double quite a lot of other characters in order to mask the fact that a familiar face from the plot is not there anymore. They put him in succession. I think that I counted six extremely dodgy wigs. And it's not too late to call Richard Guy Morby or Wig Creations and get him something a bit better. Because money has been spent on the costume and design. You know, a lot of the book talks about brands, and Patrick Bateman and his friends are brand fixated in terms of clothes. And I'm not saying they've been to Ferragamo or Armani or Chanel for the costumes, but they haven't been to Primark. The costumes are extremely good and really realistic for the period and for the arrogant, brand-obsessed style of the characters. I think I should stop there and give somebody else a chance.
Julie, tell me what you thought about it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I didn't think I would as well. I was kind of not sure what I was going to get. I went to the very first preview, and I must admit, thinking before I got there, why have I booked for a first preview? It's all going to go really wrong. It's going to be too long. But actually, I thought it was really quite slick for a first preview. I don't know the film and I don't know the book at all. So it was kind of quite a nice surprise as well. I thought Matt Smith was brilliant. And it was really clever having him on stage at the start in his underpants. I think the standing ovation that happened the night I went was genuinely because people had really enjoyed the production rather than just because it was Matt Smith. I like the way the satire worked. I like the kind of cheesiness of it all. There was, you know, something about the characters or the actors coming back and playing all these different parts, and by nearly the end of it, you could kind of spot them doing all the different parts, overdoing some of the songs. But I felt that really, really worked. I liked the backing track, and I did like the bit where they went to see Les Miserables. I thought that was really good. So, you know, people around me were laughing all the time, really enjoying it, and it really came across, this kind of satire on consumerism. And even though Bateman's a horrible character, I thought, you know, they mainly made out the other characters to be horrors as well, like Evelyn. I mean, she was a monster as well. The only bit that I thought could have been cut a little bit was on the beach, because once we'd got the joke of the body thing, I think that just went on a little bit too much. But I really enjoyed it. I was so glad I got a ticket and I went.
Yeah, I have to say, I sort of slightly regretted not booking for this when I had the chance, but I don't like musicals enough, but perhaps I'm getting to be wrong in my old age. Paul, what did you think about this?
Well, actually, I think one of the things about that will strike you if you do see the show is how incredible it looks. It captures the superficial style quite wonderfully with these projections, and it's a fairly minimalist set with just two revolves. I think Matt Smith, I'm sure many people would love to know his workout regime, which seems to be how to look creepy and hot at the same time. And I think against the projections and the lighting, it really gives him a sort of malevolent look, but also there's a likability about him as well. And of course, his first appearance where he's in his underpants and in a tanning bed is probably one of the more memorable scenes in musical theatre this year. But, you know, as John mentioned earlier, I secured tickets actually just from randomly browsing Kickstarter earlier this year and noticing that there was a campaign to actually stage that at the Almeida. And I think that was probably useful because we didn't know about the casting. And I think you could tell from the night we saw it that there was probably more fans of the material than fans of Matt Smith there. And they were enjoying it. And I enjoyed it as well. I think it looks incredible. It's potentially a great musical, particularly if it has a little bit more gore and probably less of the, particularly in the first act, less of the more exposition songs setting it up. Because I think there's a lot of repetition in the first half when they're talking about fashion and style and just the way they behave. And it does become a little bit overlong in that first part. But I think ultimately it's quite an interesting and successful depiction of this story in a musical backdrop. And I actually enjoyed it. And I think, bearing in mind that it was still in previews and there's obviously this is going to evolve and there'll be a lot more changes to it as it goes on its journey, because it originally was going to be staged on Broadway and then London has picked it up. I think it's certainly a must-see if you can get tickets to it at the moment.
We're now going to talk about Henry V, which is the final of, I will say the final of this season's of Michael Grandage's company's plays at the Noel Coward Theatre. I have a feeling that this is something that might run on for a while, even if he hasn't announced anything yet. This production stars Jude Law. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I saw a production of Fastest Clock in the Universe, which I first saw 21 years ago with a very youthful Jude Law in it. And I couldn't help thinking that when I was reminded that he was now in Henry V, that he might be a bit old for the part. Julie, tell me more about this production and whether or not I'm right about Jude Law being a bit too old.
Well, I think that's one of the things that I found really interesting was that he is obviously older as an actor, but one of the things he did really well was get across that youthfulness, that hesitation in the decision making. This production for me was the best of the Michael Grandage season by far. I was really disappointed with the Midsummer Night's Dream. The Alice and Peter was okay. I didn't see the Daniel Radcliffe one. And so this one really for me has kind of saved it. It was a very clean production, not gimmicky, not really concept Shakespeare, but they had an interesting thing where the narrator, the chorus, was actually in modern dress, and then he became more and more part of the actual action, and then he became one of the boys that was killed in war. And I think that kind of brought home to you how awful the war was. And I think that was another thing as well, that even though the English win the Battle of Agincourt, there's a real sense of loss for the French there that came across really, really well. I thought the scenes with Catherine, the Princess of France, were excellent scenes. There was a real sense of this man going through all the kind of tests. How can he lead in battle? How can he make strong decisions? When he's faced with his friend stealing Bardolph, he makes a tough decision. And then it ends with this wonderful wooing scene, which I thought Jude Law was absolutely fantastic in. I also thought Noma Dunsavani playing Mistress Quickly, and then Alice, I thought she was superb. I just kept watching her face through when they were doing the translation scene and then the wooing scene, and her kind of realisation that these two people were in love. I thought it was a really, really good production and I really, really enjoyed it.
Nick, what did you think about it?
Yeah, there's certain points there I agree with, but I think overall I found this quite an underwhelming production, which I think is how I feel about this season as a whole. It is a very kind of straightforward, basic interpretation of it. And I think, I mean, it probably doesn't help that, although I haven't seen Henry V this year, last year there was just, it seemed to be the only play anyone was staging. So I've seen lots of different takes on Henry V in the last couple of years, and this didn't feel like it had any real force behind it, any real kind of ideas behind it. I think, again, possibly the argument would be, as it was for Midsummer Night's Dream, that this is kind of a production for people who don't necessarily know their Shakespeare, or, you know, it's something to introduce people to it. So I guess there's no need for a high concept, but I was kind of looking for a bit more. I think there was a little bit of flair lacking, I think, that I kind of used to see in Michael Greenidge's Shakespeare productions that's kind of been missing from these last two. I would absolutely agree that Jude Law is fantastic in that final scene of the wooing. For me, that kind of crystallised the fact that he was miscast in the role in general, because I don't think he's one of these actors who's got sort of charm rather than raw charisma, and he's got kind of a very good understanding of the language. I mean, actually everything I have seen him in on stage has been Elizabethan and Jacobean drama, and I've found him to be very strong in that. That doesn't necessarily mean you can play every part in the canon if you're good at it, and I don't think really that the rest of the role is something that he's particularly well suited for. It is only really in that final scene where he kind of has to show a different side to the character, where he's actually playing to his strengths and really kind of getting the audience on side in a way that I just didn't feel he was, in kind of a part that in a way I suppose is sort of rabble rousing, and you know, by extension with that sort of getting the audience on side. I agree that I was very excited when I saw that Nomadib Iswaini was going to be cast in it, and I mean obviously Mrs. Quickly doesn't appear very much, although she does get a really nice speech as she describes Falstaff's death, but luckily we do also get her doubling up as Alice, and so that does mean some really nice. She's really very good at these, as Julie says, at these kind of understated little facial reactions to everything that's going on that kind of tells a story in itself. And we've got Ron Cook, who's pretty much a Grandage regular, and he's in as Pistol, and he's I thought he was good in this, as was Matt Ryan as Llewellyn. But the overall production, I thought, was that there was elements that kind of popped in that were interesting and entertaining, but I thought the whole thing kind of just lacked a bit of spark and a little bit of imagination for me.
Gareth, what did you think about it?
Well, it sounds like I'm the most positive. I think the plays are better even, because I think that it packs so much into the second half, and the first half is weaker as a result of that. But I actually thought it was probably the best production of the play I've ever seen. And I think the reason for that is because it's not the kind of... It seems to me to be usually a bit of sort of gung-ho patriotic history, really. But I thought it just had a lot more depth and a lot more complexity in this particular production. I got more out of the play, I think. And I thought Jude Law was very good. I mean, it's about 20 years since I saw him as well. And he certainly aged a lot better than I have in that period. And he is very believable as a young prince, to be honest, even though he's clearly acting, you know, he's acting way under his actual age. But I think what I liked about his performance is that he played all the kind of various facets of Henry very well, because the part does sort of, you know, it starts with this kind of newfound responsibility. You know, he moves from the lad to the man with newfound responsibility, and he goes through phases of, you know, being a bit of a warmonger and a patriot and a statesman and a leader, and then a lover. And I think he does all of those very well. I mean, Nick singled out the love scene at the end, perhaps Julie did, the love scene, which I think was outstanding. But I also thought there were lots more outstanding moments in it as well. So I thought it was a very lucid production, very well spoken. I would also pick out people that Nick picked out. And Matt Ryan, I think, is an excellent Llewellyn. And I thought that Ron Cook was great as well as Pistol. And I actually thought Jessie Buckley was really good as Catherine. I think she kind of... There's quite a sort of sparkling chemistry between the two of them, really, which is very nice. And the chorus idea, which I think a great idea, you know, the modern-day chorus. And Ashley Zangaza, who played that, really spoke the lines brilliantly, and he's been impressive in a number of other productions, and he really is one to watch, I think. So for me, the best of the Michael Grandage season, certainly better than Midsummer Night's Dream, and better than the Hamlet that Jude Law did with Michael Grandage the last time they were in the West End with that Donmar season at Wyndham's. So to be recommended by me.
We're now going to talk about Let the Right One In, which is a stage adaptation by Jack Thorne based on the film and novel by John Ajvide Lindqvist. It is on at the Royal Court, and it's oddly enough, it's their Christmas show, I believe. It's directed by John Tiffany, and we also have Stephen Hoggett as associate director. I mentioned this because there is quite a lot of, well, we've been to movement classes and we're not afraid to show it in there. Gareth, tell me what you thought about it and tell me more.
Well, I have to say that teenage vampire love stories isn't exactly my one of my genres, really. I hadn't read the book, I hadn't seen the film, so I really didn't know what I was going to see. It was just one of those bookings I made, you know, one of those bookings I made in a whole season of bookings. And it was only just before that I kind of realised what I was going to see. And I actually was hugely impressed by it, I have to say. You know, it isn't something I probably would have gone to if I'd thought more about it, but I'm really glad I did, because the National Theatre of Scotland does have history, short history, of fantastic staging. You know, things like Black Watch, which were just sensational. I mean, this is very much in the same way, the next in the series, really. It's the same director as John Tiffany and the movements by Stephen Hoggett, as you say, you know, who produces this very stylized movement, which I really like. But on this occasion, they've got a really nice design from Christine Jones. There's a whole forest on the Royal Court stage. With sort of snow on the ground, and then they just put a few props in front to create the other scenes and sort of bedrooms and shops and locker rooms and so on. And a brilliant design, but it's also got a stunning soundtrack by, I think, an Icelandic composer called Ólafur Arnalds, which I think added an awful lot to the production in terms of atmosphere. And the effects by Jeremy Chernick are really, really good. I mean, really, really good. I just thought, I mean, it gripped me from beginning to end, really. I mean, I'm not going to say much about the story because I think that would kind of spoil it a little bit. But, you know, it's a teenage vampire love story. But it's just an impeccable production. It's just kind of masterly staging, really. And, I mean, I jumped out of my seat once and I turned away several times, but I am a bit squeamish. The acting was exceptional. There's a young man called Martin Quinn who plays the boy Oscar, who's the focus of the play. He's being bullied and he meets this mysterious Ellie who lives next door, who's his friend and ultimate love interest. And he, you know, this is his professional debut, and he was exceptional, I thought. And the girl who plays Ellie, Rebecca Benson, was also outstanding. She's been in other stuff before. I think 360 was something she was in for the National Theatre of Scotland. So, you know, I just thought it was great. And I would really want to take, I wish there were sort of teenagers in, you know, godchildren or French or whatever, that I would, because I'd love to take teenagers to this, because I really think it would get them gripped on theatre. But, you know, you don't have to be a teenager to go and see it. I'm far from that. And I thought it was just thoroughly enjoyable.
Tell me what you thought about it.
Yeah, it's really hard to talk about without giving anything away. I think what I really enjoyed about it was that some of the storyline, I could kind of gather where that was going. You know, it felt obvious, oh, this is going to end up in a certain place. But other bits of it were real surprises. So I think I enjoyed that, being surprised. And at moments, I was quite shocked and jumped out of my seat because things happened that were unexpected. I was kind of interested in the idea that this is a Christmas show, because obviously the stage is covered in snow, but it's actually little bits of plastic and it was sticking to people's clothes. That looked a bit odd. I think it had a kind of strange message as well. Again, I'm not a great fan or a lot of knowledge about teenage vampire romances like Gareth, but the idea that evil can counteract evil is kind of quite a strange one that the play's exploring here. But absolutely loved it. I was really kind of surprised, and something I wasn't expecting, and came out, as Gareth did, really enjoying the whole experience. So yeah, it's worth going to see, I think.
I enjoyed this a lot, as like everybody else. I had slight problems with the plot. I've gone back and read the synopsis of the film, and it made me realise what bothered me about it. It's really that there are certain incidents that are left out, certainly of the film, from the film, where Oscar, the young boy, finds out what Ellie's true nature is, and sort of came upon slightly sudden. He realised it, and there was no background for him to do that. This is very spare production in terms of the characters. They cut down the sort of characters from the film an awful lot. And although I hadn't seen the film, it sort of these things bothered me while I was watching the play. It was just coming back and saying, well, actually, that is what has bothered me, that the some of the background wasn't explained enough. You get this very, very good relationship between the two young people and also Ewan Stewart as Hakan. It's a very well done piece, but there are some things missing from the story and from the book and from the film, and perhaps that didn't quite work for me. But like everybody else, I was very impressed by this, and especially as I'm not a big fan of the usual teenage vampire romances, especially as they make the vampires too nice. This does not make the vampires nice at all. They are very horrible, and they obey the normal physics of the vampires. The vampire cannot enter a room or a house unless you invite them in, which is why, you know, part of what the title's about, you know, let the right one in. It is, you've got to be able to say, come in, otherwise they suffer some very bad ill effects, and that's handled well. So it's taking its vampires seriously rather than making them just sort of shiny glow-in-the-dark people. So it's I was very impressed by this. We're now going to talk about Gastronauts at the Royal Court. This is a play or an experience, shall we say, created by April DeAngelis, Nessa Murthy and Wills Wilson. It builds itself as a musical, as a theatre adventure with food and music. Nick, tell me more about it and what you thought.
Yeah, it's hard to describe it in ways other than that, because it's a very strange show. I suppose I can only really say what happens is you get taken up to the upstairs theatre in the Royal Court, and initially in what they call a departure lounge, where there's these little shot glasses full of, judging by the one I drank, strange fluorescent vegetable juices. And then you get taken into a sort of a cross between a restaurant and an aeroplane. I'm not quite sure whether that's because they could never quite decide which one they wanted to do. It's one of these things about this show that's a bit vague. So it's like you're in a restaurant and all the audience are kind of seated at tables, but you're served by people dressed as air stewards and stewardesses. And you're served kind of small portions of different foods, and you hear kind of songs about, and then the actors perform little sketches about certain issues to do with food. And I can't really make it any more specific than that, because the show doesn't, unfortunately. I mean, it's just over an hour and a half long, and it covers kind of everything from the treatment of the farmers in kind of poorer countries in order to get food to the first world. It covers the unhealthy relationship of people with food, whether it's overeating or eating disorders or using food as a substitute for things when, you know, people have got issues. It covers what's in your food and the kind of artificial elements of the food. So the theatre part of it I found quite disappointing, because it's very obviously, and it very kind of tries to remind you all the time that it's sort of an issue piece and it's kind of a think piece, but I can't even say that it's been kind of researched by reading The Guardian. I think it's been researched by reading headlines in The Guardian, because there's no depth to anything. There's kind of these statistics that I think anyone who's the sort of person who's going to go see at the Royal Court will have heard about certain things, about, you know, the ethical dodginess of some of the food we get. So in that sense, it's quite disappointing. What is quite interesting is what they've done with the food that they serve to the audience. They do put a disclaimer on the advertising for the show that the audience will not be forced to eat anything they don't want to, that it's all entirely down to each audience member's decision whether they're going to try something or not. I don't know, I was expecting something a bit more terrifying than it actually was. Some of the food was actually quite nice, although judging by how much was left on plates of the other people at my table, I think maybe that wasn't a very popular opinion. I mean, the most extreme thing that shows up is some cooked crickets in a few different recipes, which is not really that surprising, because I mean it is something that people have talked about a lot, is that, you know, insects are the food of the future, and it comes in a section about the amount of environmental damage done by farming cows to the extent that they're farmed at the moment. And so it's presented not just as a theoretical kind of food alternative, but is actually presented to you as something you can try. And I thought that was not that bad taste wise, but maybe I just will eat anything that gets put in front of me. That's entirely possible as well. There's some interesting connections being made between food and the issues around them and the way it's put together. And there's these songs, you know, that intersperse with the sketches and the serving of the food. But I really felt like I wanted them to have picked an issue that they were concerned about and written a show about that, because it really is kind of in the way that you're not really being served a full meal, although I mean it's lots of very small courses, I didn't feel hungry by the end, but in the same way that you are served these many small portions of food, you're being fed these very small portions of ideas and themes, and I don't think you really came out of it any the wiser or any of the more kind of understanding anything about these issues. It's just kind of a bit of, oh, this goes on, oh, isn't that quite bad? It was disappointing in that sense.
I just thought that I do agree with you about the sort of the, yeah, it isn't anything you haven't heard before. It's if you take any interest at all in this, you know how badly, you know, beef, how much environmental damage beef is, you know how bad the process of making bread takes out the nutrients and puts stuff in that you don't want and don't necessarily want. So you get a lot of done on that. I was quite impressed by some of the ideas behind the food, especially when they sort of present you with a tray of food, none of which tastes like it looks, and that was impressive, although I didn't think it tasted particularly nice anyway. And I certainly tried I think it was a locust or a grasshopper or something like that, and it didn't taste bad at all, but I'm not sure I'd want to keep eating it all the time. But I was mildly disappointed by this. I mean, I liked the acting and that, but it was that as you said, it was not enough of anything really. They hadn't really got the arguments, and of course they're only presenting one side of the argument. They're not presenting the whole side of the argument, you know, both sides of the argument. So it's very much singing to the choir, I thought. And I think that was rather disappointing. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not right in sort of their conclusions. It's just that you need to, I always want people to show more understanding of the other side. And, you know, the other side being perhaps that the whole thing of the corporations is not just to make money, but also to make sure that people have enough calories in them, and that is, although they're probably the wrong kind of calories, it is something that these big corporations are doing. You know, they are making food cheaper, and although that has terrible costs and they probably shouldn't be doing it, but if food is cheaper, then you can have you can sustain the population. And they didn't really go into that sort of thing. They don't, you know, it's very one-sided, it's very very sort of polemical or political. Gareth, what did you think about this?
I think I'm a bit more positive than both of you, but I'm not raving about it. I actually thought we were on in a restaurant on a spaceship, hence Castronauts. And I went at lunchtime. I went at a 1:30 show, and I wonder whether, you know, that kind of lowers your expectations a bit in a way. I mean, you're not looking for such a big meal, perhaps. And I just thought it was a very, you know, pleasant 90 minutes, really. I mean, I think what I liked about it most is I think it was quite original. I like the originality of the idea. And I quite like the communal experience. I quite like sort of chatting to people at the table, you know, but afterwards they had to sort of ask us to leave because we were quite enjoying discussing what we'd just seen, really. But it isn't, you know, it's certainly not a play. It is a bit of a lecture, although I don't think it's too preachy. There's a sort of sense of Hester Blumenthal experimentation about it. And yes, you know, there are sketches and there are songs, but, you know, it's not a play. It's just a sort of, you know, a bit of a one-off experience, really. I tried most of the things except the crickets. I thought the food was, you know, it was okay. And it was interesting. I thought, you know, the meal in reverse, where, as you said, Tim, the, you know, things are not what they didn't taste, what they look like, was quite fun. So I just thought it was a perfectly enjoyable 90 minutes. But what I liked about it most, I think, is that they tried something different, really. And I thought the design, from the minute you walk into the kind of waiting room with a brilliant multicoloured shots, mine was, I think, Who Can Produce. I like the design of the whole thing, the sort of, you know, the kind of Star Trek costumes for the people. And I just thought it was a brave, interesting idea that, you know, is, we're not going to be talking about in a few years' time, probably. But I'm glad I went to see it, or glad I went to experience it.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.